You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Child Poverty Monitor is a joint project between the Children's Commissioner, Otago University and the J.R. McKenzie Trust. Released today, it has found that poverty targets for Māori, Pasifika and disabled children are not going to be met soon. The monitor argues that there are still major structural barriers, such as racism and ableism, that have led to differentiated results of poverty alleviation schemes. I spoke to the Māori Children's Commissioner, Glenda Philip-Barbara, about the monitor, what changes were needed and whether the government was doing enough. To start, I asked for a brief overview of what the new findings were.
Most of us would agree that every child in Aotearoa deserves to grow up in a whānau that has what they need to thrive, to actually live their best lives. When we've asked kids what a reasonable expectation is, they've told us they just want enough for the basics and a little bit more. You know, that kind of the idea that we're working with. What the monitors told us, however, is that we've made some good, strong moves in the right direction, but actually, right now, we're leaving significant groups of children behind. So, specifically, we are leaving Māori, Pacific and disabled children behind. And in fact, they're so far off the track to meet the targets that have been set that unless something changes immediately, these groups may never reach the target.
And just specifically, I guess, how many people is this impacting? How much has it been reduced in the last few years as well?
We know that just over 1 in 10 children nationally are regularly going without the basic. When we look into that data a little bit harder, so this is children who are said to be living in material hardship, when we look at that by group, that shoots up to 1 in 4 Pacific children, 1 in 5 Māori, and 1 in 5 children with a disability. This compares with just under 9% of Pākehā children. So the differences between these groups is just way out of the way.
Yeah, and obviously there's been a lot covered about structural issues like racism, like ableism, and that's mentioned in the report. The challenges posed by these, what exactly are they? Are there things that we can spot day to day?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, I think there's a lot that we can do to change our approach to dealing with problems like child poverty. So, I mean, let's have a think for a minute about the turnaround we've seen in the uptake of vaccination by Pacific communities, for example. The minute that we engaged Pacific health providers and working with Pacific people, I mean, the shift, the change has been enormous. We see the same thing in Kurukaupapa Māori, for example. So Māori-led, Māori immersion schools. When you compare the rates of success for children in Kurukaupapa Māori compared to Māori children in mainstream, I mean, it's like night and day. So we know this stuff. And I think if we take this approach and we apply it to solving child poverty, we can make some really incredible gains.
Yeah, and I guess the leadership by these specific groups, that's something that it took a while for Labor to pick up in this vaccine rollout. Is it something that just has been completely overlooked, something that really should have been done earlier involving Māori, involving Pasifika, involving disability groups?
Absolutely. I mean, we are a fan of efficiency in this country. We say we know that one size doesn't fit all, but actually we also know that one size fits all is actually much cheaper to roll out. You know, when we're going to get specific around design and delivery, and the initial investment in that kind of approach, of course, is going to cost a little bit more. But actually, for that investment, you end up solving the problem. And I think that's absolute gold. Look, the other thing around child poverty is income. Income really matters. We know from talking to groups and through the data that food insecurity is a massive issue. And again, you see this disparity of percentages of communities dealing with food insecurity, so that we know that for 45% of Pacific, for 30% of Māori and 10% of Pākehā children, they sometimes or often run out of food. That's misery personified. Now, we've seen a lot of good work happening in food banks, but you know, when I talk to parents who are forced to line up at a food bank to get food to feed their family for a week, I mean, it's absolutely gutting. Everyone, I think, would agree that if we can increase benefits, increase the family tax credit, give people the income they need to meet the cost of living, then, you know, give people their dignity back, and we've got a fighting chance of actually
you mentioned that these are quite broad solutions, but the differentiated things that you talk about, they haven't been introduced by Labor. They promised in the 2017 election to lift 100,000 kids from poverty by 2020, and you almost said that it's a lazy response. Has Labor failed to deliver their promises on child poverty?
We've seen some benefit increases, but, you know, to be frank with you, the family tax credit increase we saw of $20, I mean, it's a drop in the ocean, so we need more. So we need the government to do more about income for people living on the breadline. That's what the Welfare Expert Advisory Group called for, and we've stood by their recommendations for years now, calling loudly and clearly for those things to be, for those recommendations to be implemented. But I really want to focus on income, because with income, you know, there's an opportunity for dignity.
And obviously there will be some challenges regarding COVID-19 and budget issues, but it's really seen like Labor jumped hard out of the gate, and then there's not been a lot. There's the $20 tax credit, but that's not been near enough, according to you. Is there more that should be done immediately, especially to do with targeted impacts?
Yeah, look, I think we really need to go to work on the family tax credit. That is our earliest and best opportunity to get more income into these families. And you and I know, right, that where COVID-19 is concerned, families living in this kind of poverty are actually doing it blooming hard. The weight of food insecurity is being felt by every community in Aotearoa. I don't think there's a single small community now that isn't redoubling its efforts to try and get food distributed out to all of those families doing it tough through COVID times. But my point is, I don't think it's sustainable. We really need to address these income issues.
And just lastly, because obviously child poverty, it's an impact to a young group of people, but the impacts long term on how people develop, on how their opportunities are later in life, what specifically are these?
If you're living in poverty, you're living in a world of toxic stress. So that's just right off the bat. Every day is a struggle. If there's not enough food on the table and kids are hungry, that's a disaster. I mean, we've got school lunches happening in schools now. 200,000 kids got access to probably the only decent meal of the day at school. That's fantastic, but it's not a sustainable solution to poverty. So what we want to see is an increase in income so that these kids can get access to a decent education, do have a fair shot to achieve an education. It's only through educational achievement that people can hope to earn a decent living and get out of this poverty trap.
That was the Māori Children Commissioner Glenda Phillip Barbara speaking on recent information about child poverty in New Zealand. In that interview, she touched on the issues that child poverty has for education and learning opportunities. To gain a better understanding of this, I also spoke to Liam Rutherford, who is the president of the New Zealand Educational Institute. I began by asking him what challenges child poverty posed in our classrooms.
So we certainly back the Children's Commission's report for bold action on child poverty. We know educators are the ones that see the day-to-day reality along with whānau in terms of the impact that that has. By and large, it shifts the role of schools when we have children coming into classrooms with such high levels of poverty, because it means that you're having to do so much more pastoral and supportive care with children before you can get to some of the more traditional areas of learning. It's one of those things where, as a result of such high levels of poverty, we are seeing that gap between those levels of inequality, and sadly it's children that end up wearing the cost of that.
And just specifically, I guess, what are some of the challenges that teachers face in the classroom from children who do face extreme poverty?
Yeah, so it is things from children coming together, coming to school without food. There is a lot of talk around material hardships, so not necessarily having clothes and shoes. But at the same time, we're also seeing housing playing a massive role, where halfway through the year a child might have to leave your classroom to go to a school on the other side of town because they've had to leave their rental accommodation.
And are there also challenges to do with non-material things like ability to learn and stuff like that, from just not having the support, not having the income while you're growing up?
I think we have to be careful around necessarily tying a cause and effect between poverty and other challenges at schools. But it is fair to say that schools currently aren't equipped to meet the needs of children coming into school. We see that play out in the learning support space really heavily, where we've got massive wait times in schools to be able to get specialist help into children that need it. One example of that here in Wellington is being able to access mental health support. Children go on to 10 to 12 week waiting lists straight from the word go. It just isn't good enough for a country like Aotearoa that already has so much wealth that we have created a system where children, particularly Māori, Pacifica and disabled children, are missing out when it comes to getting their fair share of education.
And for teachers themselves, it does sound like, from what you've said, that there's huge pressure. It seems like huge stress on teachers. What are some things that teachers face that are really challenging to do with child poverty?
Yeah, so as we're seeing New Zealand becoming more and more unequal, the workload that is falling back on teachers to be able to cater for large classes of really diverse learners takes its toll on teachers' health and well-being, but also their ability to take satisfaction out of the job that they're doing, because it's becoming increasingly harder with less and less staffing and resources. These days you've got kids coming into classrooms with such diverse needs. Classes and the time that teachers have are just far too big to be able to make that meaningful impact that teachers want to be able to do when they come into the profession.
So for solutions then, obviously because the impacts of child poverty, it's a big thing to tackle and it's going to take lots of support from government. But for teachers in classrooms, for schools, are there any things that could be done? Things like more counsellors, more support staff?
Yeah, so at the beginning of this year, there was an independent review into the way that the primary sector is staffed called Pu'aotanga. And we think that the recommendations that that group came up with really do speak to the genuine solutions that we need. They spoke about smaller class sizes, greater access to teacher aides, greater access to specialist supports like speech language therapists, education psychologists, and making sure that we are delivering classroom pedagogies in a way that is going to work for all tamariki. And so that speaks to access to timely professional learning and development.
So then, has the government done enough to support children in dire poverty in their education circumstances?
And I think teachers around the country would feel that it's an issue that is getting worse. We know that not all the solutions lie in education. It's also about access to housing, health and the wider portfolio of public services. But at the same time, teachers are the ones that are dealing with the brunt of being understaffed and under-resourced.
But in terms of this Labor government, have they done enough to support teachers supporting kids in dire poverty?
No, we certainly back the call from the Children's Commission for bold action on child poverty. We have a really good sense of what those solutions need to look like in education. Particularly it's about dealing with the chronic understaffing and under-resourcing. But we know that it is going to need solutions from across society.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.